From World Radio and the creative team that brings you the world and everything in it, this is Effective Compassion.
Here's one thing I learned over the summer. Guard donkeys are surprisingly effective. These particular donkeys guard a grassy green field and a blue puddle of a pond. Goats mill around, munching grass, and cows sleep under shady clusters of trees. A yellow lab trots over to the fence line to see what all the fuss is about.
Even the small ones are very protective.
The guard donkeys and the yellow lab work for Jay Doss. He owns the fields, the animals, the three barns, the little white farmhouse from the 1800s, 57 acres in all.
That's why you'll see donkeys around farms, especially with livestock and things, because they're guardian animals. They are very aggressive, and you know the loud yee-haw, 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 their neighing is very loud and intimidating to other animals. They kick, they're very ornery with a predator or whatever. They'll just run stuff off. And so coyotes, anything like that, they don't...
The donkeys keep an eye on the goats and cows, while Doss and his wife, Christy, run the farm. It's a peaceful, sun-drenched scene in a little out-of-the-way town called Snow Camp, North Carolina. All in all, not the sort of place you'd expect to find a bunch of recovering drug addicts. I'm Anna Johansson-Brown.
I'm Sarah Schweinsberg.
And this is Effective Compassion.
This episode is about addiction, the patterns and choices and life circumstances that lead to it, and the patterns, choices, life circumstances, hard work, prayer, grit, sweat, time, and love that can help break its grip.
Effective Compassion is made possible by listeners like you. Additional support comes from Samaritan Ministries, a biblical solution to healthcare, connecting you to other Christians who will care for you spiritually and financially when you experience a medical need. More at SamaritanMinistries.org/worldpodcast.
The stories you're about to hear are hard. Just so you're aware, they might be too hard for younger listeners. So if you have some of those around, you might want to pause and come back later. A few years ago, a young man named TJ started having back pain. He was an athlete in high school. Then doctors diagnosed him with scoliosis. The pain was intense, so a friend offered to sell him some oxycodone, the opiate-based pain medication.
It's powerful stuff. Soon, TJ couldn't get enough of it. He started buying it from his friend, then from anyone who would sell. But the drugs were expensive, so he switched to the cheaper version, heroin.
That still cost money, so TJ got in touch with a guy farther up the drug-dealing food chain. He started selling heroin, and that's when the authorities caught up with him. TJ went to jail for 2 years, just got out in October. He's 26, clean-cut, with brown eyes and a jaunty smile. He's smart, graduated near the top of his class, has an intact family, and opioids still got him. Now, he has to figure out how to live again.
Almost 21 million Americans have at least one addiction. They turn, again and again, to a thing or a behavior in spite of very real, devastating consequences. Once you're in that deep, it's hard to swim back.
We're not a homeless shelter. We're not a legal strategy for people. We're not a get out of jail free. These are tough programs that deal with laying your life down.
Jay Doss and his guard donkeys live and work full time on the farm. They deal with a lot of animals, pigs, horses, guineas, chickens, dogs, one cat, and a couple of wild skunks. But the farm is just a means to an end. The real mission is helping men and women break their addictions.
It's called Living Free Ministries, and it's a residential drug rehabilitation program. The residents work on the farm as part of their recovery. The sprawling farmhouse on one end of the property is for men, and the brand new home on an adjacent property is for women. It's called Mary's House.
Jay's wife, Christy Doss, heads up the women's program. Although, program might be a strong term. It's more like living life with healthy routines and boundaries.
Let me say that a lot happens at the table. It did for Jesus, right? So sitting down as a family, For meals is important.
It's lunchtime at Mary's house. The women are in the kitchen, setting the table, chopping peppers and cucumbers, getting food out of the oven, pouring glasses of ice water. Casey is on dinner duty this week.
Well, last night I made a chicken pie, and I did something different. I've never made one like that before. I put cheese in it, and we did, like, drop biscuits on top. So it was
the women rotate making different meals for the whole group.
And we have a garden outside, so we get fresh vegetables and tomatoes and all that stuff.
Casey has dark red hair and a hot pink tank top. She's been here for about 3 weeks.
Before I came here, I had been in Florida because my fiance was on the run at the time. He had warrants, and I'm just being totally honest. He had warrants and said he needed to get out of the state, so I left with him like I was on the run. And when he got arrested, I was left on the street by myself. Didn't really think that process through, I don't guess. And I ended up staying in Florida for about 2 years, homeless on the street.
She already had a history of addiction.
I was on heroin for almost a decade, and I went to the methadone clinic and got clean, but I was on methadone the entire time, which I don't know if you want to call that clean or not. But
methadone is a substitute opioid. It blocks the effects of drugs like heroin so you don't go through withdrawal. But it produces a similar high, so it can still be addictive.
I didn't use any street drugs for about 6 years, and then I relapsed with meth.
Methamphetamine abuse is exploding across rural America.
The number of heroin users has nearly doubled in just the past 3 years.
The biggest meth bust in U.S. history.
More than 47,000 people died from drug overdoses, more than any single previous year in American history.
In the United States, every year, more people die from drug overdoses than car wrecks, almost twice as many.
Long-term health effects include heart disease, lung disease, seizures, cancer, mental illness, and liver, kidney, and musculoskeletal damage.
Drugs decrease pleasure found in ordinary things like food. They weaken your immune system. They wreak havoc on your ability to make decisions. They sap your energy. They trash your memory and cognition and send your stress levels through the roof.
Drugs contribute to homelessness. They lead to anxiety, depression, paranoia, aggression. Drugs and alcohol have the potential to wreck your life, and everybody knows it. So why do people still use them?
Obviously, some people would say, well, because it feels good. But there's more to it than that.
My mom and dad were both college professors. Listen, we would sit down at the kitchen table, and I thought everybody did this.
Val Cater runs Gilgal, a rehab program for homeless women just south of Atlanta. When she talks with her whole body, flourishing hand gestures, wide eyes, a grin here, a look of disbelief there.
And I'm thinking this is what everybody was doing at the breakfast and dinner table.
Not true. When Cater started Gilgal, she heard story after story that broke her heart.
I think about one client who, when she, I think she said she was about 7 or 8, her mom, who was an addict, her mom actually would allow men to pay her to sleep with the 7-year-old, okay? And then she injected her with heroin, and this is when mom started letting guys have their way with her. And so she didn't choose heroin. The fact that she ended up strung out on heroin, the fact that she ended up in and out of juvie, you know, it's really not one of those things that you would look at and judge her for, because whose mom does that to you at 7? You know, I can't tell you my life would have been any different, right?
The women at Gilgal come from every kind of background under the sun, and they don't fit a specific stereotype.
Because I'm on the south side of Atlanta, when I started, if you had asked me to tell you what do you think your typical woman is going to be like, I probably would have said a black female. You know,
but that's not what Cater found. She's had about 50-50, black women and white women.
I've had a couple of Hispanic women, one woman who was an American Indian. Drugs and alcohol don't know any race, any socioeconomics. They don't know education levels. I've had women who didn't complete the 3rd grade. And then I've had women with 2 master's degrees. I've had military women. I've had women who were nurses. I've had women who, you know, were dancers, who were prostitutes. It doesn't matter.
Cater named the ministry Gilgal after a place in the book of Joshua.
You'll remember the story. The Israelites were in the wilderness for 40 years, and when they crossed over the Jordan, the first thing they did is camp at a place called Gilgal.
The word means cycle or circle.
We would look at, they were breaking a cycle of defeat, moving into a cycle of victory, which is what I hope my women do while they're here. They break that cycle of defeat. They move into a cycle of victory.
The women have been in a cycle of defeat for years. They've lost everything to their addiction. Jobs, houses, children. And even though they all come from very diverse backgrounds, their stories share some common themes. Root causes beneath the addiction.
Many times it's a thing where they were trying to fit in.
Most of the women started using when they were very young. The average age for women at Gilgal is about 14 years old. One woman told Cater she started drinking in second grade.
I just wanted the group to like me. And then I'll ask them, and where are those people now? And they can never tell you. There you were, trying to fit in, and those people who were so important to you are not even a part of your life today. What does that tell you? You know, fitting in may not have been that important, right?
Remember No Longer Bound? It's a drug rehab program for men 45 minutes north of Gilgal. We visited it in episode 1. Greg Yost is a counselor there. When he talks to the guys in the program, he hears a different set of themes and root causes.
Oh, again and again, father issues. Rejection from the father. Things with the father not being there, not being emotionally available.
Many of the men feel like they're somehow inadequate.
And they're constantly doing that and trying to prove something other than what they really believe about themselves. And that struggle is where the disconnect and all their, nothing really adds up. Their irrational behaviors and lashing out at people and self-protection and delusional thinking, all these things, they're different coping mechanisms, but they all stem from the foundational belief that the enemy has lied to them and told them, see, I told you, you're not enough. You don't matter. People don't really like you.
Back at Living Free Ministries, the women report similar stories.
The biggest thing I struggle with is, am I worthy? Am I loved? Because I've never really had that. So that's
Barbara has been at Mary's house for about 5 months, born and raised in South Dakota. You can hear it in her voice.
My mom passed away when I was young, so I just had a dad. So I kind of was a neighborhood kid. Everybody took care of me, kind of fed me, kind of stuff. Went to college for a while. I didn't drink or anything in high school, Seth. Once I went to college, then it was like, oh, what's this? So I started in college, and it kind of just continued and grew and grew.
She started drinking as a freshman and kept at it for the next 39 years.
But in the last 10 years, it's really gotten where I was drinking 24 hours a day. I'd go to work. I'd open beer cans in the bathroom and put them in my cup and sit at work and drink all day.
She says she doesn't have a dramatic story because even though she was homeless for a little bit, she's never been to jail.
Barbara worked a steady job at a telecommunications company, but all her money went to drinking and gambling.
And in South Dakota is different. We have video lottery, so there's a casino on every corner. So you can go in and have, you know, your beer and your gambling all at the same time. I'd go up my lunch hour and put in $20, $30. So I was always broke because I'm either buying alcohol or gambling it away. When my family caught me that I was drinking and gambling, they just cut me off altogether.
Barbara never married. That fed her sense of worthlessness.
I've never liked myself. I was overweight. You know, I'm not pretty. No one loved me because I've never been married. So I think I'm not lovable. You know, those kind of things.
Greg Yost says that's when drugs and alcohol seem most attractive.
And then when people try alcohol for the first time, wow, I feel great. They've never felt good about themselves. It makes sense to use the alcohol and the substance. They feel wonderful. And when it makes sense, why would you quit? Why would I quit using substance? That's the only time I felt good about myself. So that's the thing that you find predominant in almost every one of the cases here.
Often, people who use drugs never learned how to process trauma or even ordinary stressors and emotions. They just stifled them with substances. Here's Casey at Living Free.
Because I don't know how to deal with life issues without, you know, running to the same thing that I've always run to once I discovered, you know, that I like to get high or that getting high made me feel like the issues weren't there. That's what I run to.
Okay.
I don't know how to handle it any other way, so that's what I'm hoping to gain.
Sometimes the women never learned basic skills. Over at Gilgal, Val Cater runs into that a lot. One time, a staffer came to her and said that Deborah, a woman in the program, wasn't doing her chore. But Deborah kept saying she had done it.
But yet I can look and see that she hasn't done her chore. She said, we just need to put her out or write her up or whatever. And I said, listen, why don't you watch her do her chore? Okay, just watch, see what she does. And so she says she did, and her chore was to sweep. And so what Deborah did, she started at the bottom rung of the stairs and she swept. And she moved up and she swept. And she moved up to the next rung and she swept. And so when she got up to the top...
Light bulb moment for Val Cater. Don't make assumptions.
Oh, no! That she didn't know to start at the top and work her way down. You know, I can't make the assumption that you lived in a house where there were stairs and that you know how to sweep. Or that you know not to put Dawn detergent in the dishwasher, right?
You can't make assumptions about how a person was raised or what counted as normal for them growing up.
I was teaching a class one time, and this 19-year-old, it just was a simple little thing. There were rules that you had in your home when you grew up. What are some of the rules that you grew up with? She says, oh, I know. I had a rule in my house. And I go, what was the rule in your house? She says, you can't throw the blunt in the front yard. I said, you mean like a bunt cake pan? Oh, Miss Val, the bunt, like the bunt of the marijuana cigarette. I go, oh, you couldn't throw it in the front yard. Now, why couldn't you throw it in the front yard? She says, because the marijuana plant would grow and everybody would know you were doing smoking dope. And so I'm thinking, note to Val, she can't go home. You know, that's not a good place for her to be.
Some of the women never learned how to live alongside other people. Jasmine is a young single mom living at Gilgal. She's been drinking heavily for 10 years. She's tried to kill herself multiple times, wrecked her car 3 times, and lost custody of her son. Her family disowned her. She came to Gilgal when she had nothing left to lose.
So I'm like, oh God, am I really gonna be able to do this? Because I've never been able to finish anything. I've never been able to see anything all the way through.
It was a steep learning curve for Jasmine. The schedule, the structure, the rules, all the talk about God, not being able to drink or smoke, and having to deal with other women she didn't particularly like.
At Gilgal, the women live in homes together. They're elbow to elbow all the time, and they do everything together.
It was one in particular. It was a young lady that was here, and like our personalities were the exact opposite. So she really couldn't take my flamboyant attitude.
Jasmine is used to stuffing emotions or exploding, but definitely not addressing relational issues.
So we didn't address the situation. We just went our separate ways. I'm with you, you avoid me. But it began to create tension in the house. Even though we weren't bothering each other, you could still feel the thickness in the air.
Finally, the other woman asked if they could work things out.
And so we sat down and we talked with one of the house managers. She mediated and we got a level of understanding. And it was just like, why don't we like each other? And neither one of us could give an answer because there was no really solid reason. And we understood that, you know, we have different personalities, but it's no reason that we can't coexist in the same house and be cordial and be friendly and be respectful to each other.
She says that was a valuable lesson. After all, in the real world, she's going to have bosses and coworkers and roommates she doesn't get along with. And she has to know how to handle those situations. You can't just walk off the job or yell at your boss. That may seem like a basic lesson, but for many of these women, it's life-changing. Over at No Longer Bound, the men have to learn how to process emotions, too.
I've been living homeless in my truck for about over a year.
Alexander has curly brown hair and a low ponytail and some seriously green eyes. He's very matter-of-fact about his story.
And I'd been living homeless after my fiancée, she passed away. She lost her battle to addiction, found her hanging in the closet. And just all the stuff that spawned after that, just I spiraled out after that. And I'd been shot by my brother with a 20 gauge. I got stabbed in the chest twice. That was a couple years ago. And so just all that compiled on top of one another, and I was still using.
Alexander never processed the trauma. He had no idea how to cope with it, except by using. His cousin told him about No Longer Bound in the fall of 2019. Alexander figured he needed to try something, so he might as well.
You know, I came down here, got as high as I could before I came down here. Got on the plane, made it down here, was detoxing, barely remember the first week. But, just as I started to come down off that and started to feel the weight of all the stuff that I've been dragging with me surfacing, I was manic, I was all over the place, I was breaking down, and, you know, it was just, you know, where there was this one staff member, you know, just sitting there with me at the table up there while I was just bawling my eyes out, and just uncontrollably, or just, you know.
First rule of any rehab program worth its salt: know your people, love your people. Remember CPS? Challenging, personal, spiritual. Those are the hallmarks of an effective ministry. For people who are fighting substance abuse, the importance of that personal element can't be overstated. They're so used to people dismissing them or not wanting to be around them. Alexander says the love he found at No Longer Bound was the first thing that made him want to change. Some of the volunteers reached out to a group of the guys in the program, not on ministry time, but on their own time.
I'm used to you're used to the stigma and stuff like that, but the people like brought us over to their house for Christmas and like had us there, and I'm like, this is just like, if you want to talk about just, I don't know, love in sense of just making a huge shift in my heart of having that outpouring onto me, because I'm sitting here just like feeling just so ostracized already by the world, just so disconnected, so rejected, and then being just welcomed in, and they're just treating us like family, and they cooked us food. Not just that, but sat out there, had conversations with them, like, just, like, you know, didn't treat us any differently. And that was the first big thing in my mind of, like, you know, wow, just that impact.
That's part of the bedrock of these ministries. Gilgal, No Longer Bound, Living Free. They engage with each individual and tailor the strategies for each person.
No Longer Bound is technically a year-long program. But if one of the men is really struggling or something just isn't clicking, the counselors will sometimes send him back to the start of the program. That's the C in CPS, challenge. You don't let people do whatever they feel like. You challenge their behavior.
So there's different interventions, like you'll see like negative behavior, they'll do an intervention. So that's
Edward Bailey is the executive director at No Longer Bound. But back in 2004, he was a young, struggling addict working his way with painful slowness through the program. After 2.5 months in, he got sent back to the beginning to start over.
But there are all sorts of interventions, and it's up to the individual's counseling and care team to decide what they need most.
You know, sometimes they'll use also creative interventions with someone, like, depending on what it is that they're dealing with. I mean, we've had people, they'll carry an item around as a physical reminder of some behavior that they're displaying is like,
Another guy was medicating with work. Now that the drugs were gone, he was overdosing on work and using that to avoid feeling anything.
And so one of the interventions was he would sit and watch others work and not be allowed to work, which was really hard for him. But it helped him face, okay, I'm using work to not feel and face, and this is what I came here for. So, yeah, for us the whole point is like to mine beneath the surface and do whatever it takes to get beneath there to uncover what was driving their addiction.
Getting beneath, to the root cause, is the most important thing these ministries do. At No Longer Bound, it means unpacking every basic concept the men have and starting from scratch. You can't start with telling them that God can heal them because they don't have an accurate conception of who God is.
You know, when they come in, it's hard for us sometimes to use a father analogy because a lot of them have had bad fathers. And so God is not a positive word to them.
So it means going back to the basics and building up from there. That's what we'll talk about next time.
In episode 3, we'll talk about the healing process and some of the tactics these ministries use to help restore hope.
People that have healthy relationships and healthy concepts of their self and God, they just don't do heroin. You don't need to.
That's next week on Effective Compassion. I'm Sarah Schweinsberg.
And I'm Anna Johansson Brown. Effective Compassion is produced by the creative team at World Radio. Our producer is Lee Jones. Our technical producer is Paul Butler. And our technical engineer is Rich Rosel.
Additional support for Effective Compassion comes from Samaritan Ministries, a community of Christians who, through prayer, encouragement, and financial support, will care for you when you have a medical need. When the body of Christ comes together to provide for one another, burdens are lifted and God is glorified. This applies to all areas of life, including healthcare. More at SamaritanMinistries.org/worldpodcast.